when I was a kid, when we weren't watching TV, and if you've heard that we had a TV sitting at the edge of our kitchen table, and we sat and watched it through dinner, but when we weren't watching TV and we were in the car, my folks had control of the car radio. And they only had one station they would listen to, just one. There, you know, like memory one, that was it. We only listened to one station in the car, and it was the college radio station out of Augustana College in Rock Island, WVIK, and it was an affiliate of National Public Radio. And that was the only station my folks would listen to. And for many years, on Saturday night, wherever we were at, we would listen to A Prairie Home Companion. And it was, and if you're not familiar with it, it is a radio show that was all about, it was a variety show, but the main part of it was the great storyteller Garrison Keillor talked about news from this fictional town in Minnesota called Lake Wobegon. And often he would, in this monologue, tell stories about the people who lived in town that belonged to one of two churches in that town, because it was a small town, and in Minnesota, there's only really, I mean, only really two brands. There was Lutheran and Roman Catholic, and so it was either Lake Wobegon Lutheran Church members or Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility Catholic Parish. And so he would tell stories about the folks in this town that went to one of these two churches, and I know it doesn't apply to everyone here, but he accurately depicted life in small towns in the upper Midwest. And that's where I came from. So it sounded vaguely familiar when he talked about certain people. But it wasn't just Saturday nights. If we were in the car in the morning, we were listening to Morning Edition. If we were in the car in the evening doing something, we were listening to All Things Considered. That's just how it was in my family. But here's the thing. When I don't listen to audiobooks in the car now, I still tune in to National Public Radio to catch the news, but there are two times a year that I hate listening to National Public Radio. Do any of you know when that time of year is? What time of year is that? Yep, pledge drives. Sorry, Scott, I'm derailing your announcement, by the way. It's not about what you said, okay? It's not, you know. I'm glad Brett's not here. I mean, this could be bad. But I would turn it off. I'm like, I don't want to listen to somebody interrupting my programming for a week or so. So I take a break the minute they say, well, it's pledge drive week, and I'm done. Now, the thing is that often people think, well, it's National Public Radio. It gets funding from the government. But in actuality, about 14% of their budget is grant money. But the other 86% comes from colleges, individuals, and corporations. They rely on the generosity of their listeners. Now, as a kid, I also watched every Labor Day weekend the telethon with Jerry Lewis. And you know the history of the telethon to help folks who suffer with muscular dystrophy. And it would be on for 24 hours or so, and they would be raising money for research, for medical help, and even summer camp for folks who struggled with muscular dystrophy. They appealed with heartwarming stories, but they also had big-name musical groups and often many comedians. And it was touching as a kid because I remember once my brother and I actually went out to go solicit money for donations, so we ran down to the local TV station, because you know it all always turns back to the local station, to put money in their big fish bowl, and I think we were hoping to be on TV, but we weren't. But even seeing the stories moved us as children to make a difference, because the telethon is fueled by generosity. Now, with all that being said, over the past month, we've been talking about our core values, and I've been picking TV shows and TV show theme songs to kind of plug in to where we've been, like Cheers and Golden Girls and Hill Street Blues, and you know, and so we've had a number of TV theme shows, but when we come to the point of talking about generosity, shows about generosity are hard to find. Now, there are heartwarming shows, things like, you know, Little House on the Prairie and Highway to Heaven and pretty much anything that Michael Landon's ever been in, even Bonanza. But shows specifically about generosity are few and far between. I mean, you could say, well, what about game shows? But remember, game shows do give things away, but you have to earn it. You have to complete a challenge. You have to make sure that the price is right. If you want to be a millionaire, you got to answer so many questions. If you want to play Jeopardy, what is this or that? It's not really generosity because you're earning it. So I was going through my mind thinking about television shows that I watched that were about generosity. And disappointingly, I'm letting you down, there is no TV theme show song for this week. Because there's really not much to go on. I mean, and it says something about our culture that shows about generosity aren't really that big a deal. Because honestly, generosity doesn't sell. Violence sells. Sex sells. Drama sells. Nostalgia sells, like Little House on the Prairie. But not generosity. Now, at first service, I tasked those folks to say, give me some shows. And one that predated me, and maybe some of you remember it, it was a show called The Millionaire. Some of you might know. Yeah, you're all like, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, that's the older congregation at the earlier service. That was long before me. The Millionaire was one of them. And so that was one of them. But I, like I said, I could only think of one show, and it was Extreme Home Makeover. Now, the theme song to it was unmemorable, so it's not worth saying, do you know this? Because none of us would know it. But the background on this show, it was on ABC for many seasons, about nine. They would pick a family who was in dire straits for various reasons, health, financial, sometimes the combination of that. And they would show up on their door one morning early, unbeknownst to them, and say, your family's going to Disney World for the week. And they'd send them off to Disney World, and they would immediately start working on rehabbing their house. Often it meant tearing it down to the foundation and starting over. Now they would take into account each family member, and when they rebuilt the house, they would make sure that each bedroom for each of the family members was designed for their likes, the things that they like to do and their passions. And so everybody would get something designed based on their favorite things. And of course, the main part of the house was always furnished with new stuff, and the work crew would be working nonstop for 7 days, sometimes around the clock. And so at the end of the week, they're just finishing things up. The family comes back, and they're placed in front of the house with the, you know, the Extreme Home Makeover bus blocking the view of their new home. And they'd be standing out there wanting to see what had happened. And at that point, Ty Pennington, who was kind of the ringleader of the show, with his megaphone would yell, "Move that bus." You remember that, if you watched that show? And they'd pull it back. That's me watching the show every Sunday. Every Sunday night, I'd be in tears. Literally. I'd be like, look what they did for them. That was me. And they would see this new house. And those who built the house were crying. Those who received this generosity was crying. I was crying. It was just, they were excited to see what happened in 1 week, and they were so moved. And often they brought in local help, other general contractors, right? And so they would get caught up in the generosity, and then they would figure out ways to do extra things that weren't required of them. I've saw many shows where they were able to put money into the scholarship funds for the kids who had no money for college or secondary education. So it wasn't just helping build the house. They wanted to do something more. And so they would add the generosity of one thing spurred the generosity of other things. And it was an amazing thing. But it was all about this theme of generosity. And it also occurred to me that if you watch this show and you didn't cry, you're probably not human. That's you know, no judgment, though. No judgment, right? No judgment. But we've been talking about our core values for the past 5 weeks, and it really is clear that joy is the motivation for all that we do here. And not only is it the motivation of what we do, but the kind of the final piece or the highest piece of fruit or the largest jump in growth for us really is, and I don't mean just Bethel, but overall, is really the idea of generosity. That's not the low-hanging fruit. That's not the easiest thing to do. That is really the highest level of commitment. But also, it also brings the highest amount of joy as well. Scott mentioned it. I've mentioned it a couple of times, that the joy of the Lord is your strength. And if we want to maximize the joy of living life as a Christ-centered community, really the final step in that is generous living. But it's also the hardest. And the reason is that every message that you receive on TV and online is contradictory to being a generous person. I mean, honestly, often you hear kind of the notion that is left unsaid oftentimes is, well, the more I have, the happier I will be. The more nest egg I have, the happier I'll be. The more things I have, the happier I'll be. The more whatever, the more secure I will be. The richer I am, the thinner I am, the nicer I am, you know, the nicer car I drive, the more beautiful. I mean, I just paged through ads, and here's the messages we're receiving. Up there in the top corner is a perfume ad telling you to be delicious, which means interpret it as you want. Chevrolet, yeah, you've let me down. Lust conquers all. Here's wealth management, things that everybody wants, money, sex, and power, and we'll help you with the money part. You know? And then, of course, even in the back of comic books, Charles Atlas, you know, you get muscles like me, if you tear that out and fill that out, and if you get muscles like me, then you will be more attractive, strong, whatever, whatever, whatever. Dave, what was that thing called again? Dynamic tension. Dynamic tension, patent pending, right? But this is the messages that we're receiving, and it's all lies. It really is. I mean, we're often told, you know, in popular culture, he who dies with the most toys wins. But I'm going to tell you, he who dies with the most toys is still dead. It's just the way it is. By the way, I love the name Gooch Lane. I'd love to rename this out here, Gooch Lane. That's a great name for a street. But this isn't new. King Solomon, 3,000 years ago, struggled with this. Can you imagine? 3,000 years ago, even King Solomon struggled with this, and he wrote about it in Ecclesiastes, and this is what he wrote. He said, I hated all the things that I had toiled for under the sun because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. So even he was like, oh, I worked so hard. I got all this stuff. Oh, and I'm still going to die, and I have to give it away. Matter of fact, he goes on to say that I don't know what they're going to do with my stuff once I have to, you know, give it away, once I will it or somebody inherits it. So he struggled with, why am I working so hard? Because I don't get to keep it in the end anyways. And I mean, the good news is in our house, luckily our kids don't have to worry about that, right? It'll be their surprise. Shh, don't tell them. But we've been told a lie that happiness or joy is found in being more beautiful, more handsome, more thin, you know, more stuff, better car, all that stuff. And last Sunday, if you weren't here, I ended the message saying the biggest secret in the kingdom of God is this. It's more blessed to give than to receive from Jesus' own lips. And we somewhat subscribe to that. We kind of believe that at times. Like at Christmas, when we give presents to children, and they open it up, and they are happy, and they're joyous, and it brings you just as much happiness to give that as they are to receive it, and you totally get that. But it's harder to get our heads wrapped around that when it comes to generous giving on a regular basis to a charity or even to the church. The joy isn't quite there as it is at Christmas. And I know this because overall Christians in America give about 2.4% of their income to church. Lutherans give 1.6 on average. Depending on your perspective, this may seem low to you. And you might want to ask the question, why, if it seems low, why is it low? Because it is easier to give of your heart, hospitality, forming Christ-centered community. It's easier to give that way. It's easier to grow with spiritual growth, even to responding to needs, whether it's of time or of a short-term project that we're going to give to so that we can, you know, like help one child or something at West Valley Community Center, like one-time things. Those are easy to do. It is a harder thing to reach to being a person who lives generously every day. Because every media outlet tells you that more is better, and the more you have and the more you hold on to is better. So we're fighting against the current of the messages that we're receiving. However, though, if we turn to God to hear what God has to say about this, we discover something interesting. If we go to the most famous passage in the New Testament, just the first half of it, we learn everything we need to know. For God so loved the world that he, say it louder, that he gave. Yeah, just let's stand there. That he gave, period. God is a giver. God is not a taker. And you know, and I heard you say it, you know what he gave. He gave his son, Jesus, to us, the most valuable possession that God had. He gave himself. That's generous living. That doesn't even take into account that God gave us the world, that God gave us ourselves. But on top of that, he gives himself. God is a giver, and God is a generous giver. God delights in that, giving way more than expected or even deserved, right? So when we share what we have, the feeling of joy grows. When we go the extra step or the extra mile, joy expands. When we give instead of take, joy flourishes. Why is that? Because generosity is actually good for us. Don't forget that the opposite of being generous is being a miser, a hoarder of resources. And don't forget that miser is the root word for another word that we know. Miserable. The dean or the father of American psychiatry. His name was Carl Menninger, and he founded the Menninger Clinic way back in the early part of the 20th century. And he actually lived until about 1990, and people respected all the work that he did over the years, and that's why he's kind of known as the father of American psychiatry. And he once said this, that generous people are rarely mentally ill people. I find that to be a fascinating statement. And you say, well, that's, you know, that's old science. Actually, it's not. Today, I looked over this past week about that statement, and even today, when people are stuck in a rut, one of the things that the advice given on many websites about creating positive mental health is to become a giver, to be a giver of time, a giver of money, a giver of committed to a cause outside of yourself. So even today, people say, you need to get out of a rut if you're struggling. Become a giver, because that won't fix it, but it will help you. But I know, I get it. When someone starts talking about money from the pulpit, you get edgy, right? A little edgy. You could even be accused me of being self-serving, right? But this isn't about the church budget. I'll leave that to you. This isn't about the church budget. This is about tapping into joy. To live a life that resembles Jesus will actually bring you greater joy. And like I said, I think the hardest or the highest level of commitment to do that is generous living and generous giving. But it also means something else in the context of the church, is that when you do give and you give generously, you become more than just a recipient of ministry. You become a stakeholder in all that we do, not only in ministry, but in mission as well. And there's something about having ownership in that that brings joy as well. Now, I don't remember if I've ever told you this. Maybe I have. But Jesus talks more about money and giving than he does about heaven and hell. Of the 38 parables, 16 of them are about money and possessions. In the Gospels, one out of every 10 verses deals with money. If you blow back and not just say New Testament, but the Bible, it offers 500 verses on prayer and less than that on faith, but more than 2,000 on money and possessions. Why? Because God knows that we get weird about money and possessions. So God emphasizes it to be pretty clear in his own book that being generous is not only important for being a follower of God, but that it's actually good for us. That's, you know, you got to keep hammering away at it because we keep getting conflicting messages out in the world. But here clearly, it's not about the amounts. Both readings we had today, the widow who gave in a poor, you know, fraction of a penny, but she gave all that she had. And then also the offering taken to the church for the church in Jerusalem. Both of them were saying it's not about the amount, it's your willingness, your eagerness to be generous. So I thank God. I thank God that you all, when we gathered to talk about core values, you said generosity was important and it is core to who we are. It's not something I made up. It's something you said, this is who we are. And when we live into that, what happens? God performs an extreme home makeover life edition on us. Amen.